Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, you know the drill. Text in your questions to 710-710. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So we're getting news on a couple things out of Seahawks camp. A, Jamal Adams isn't there. It's an excused absence. Apparently he's got some family issues going on. And then I saw this other story that was brought out. Now, Dwayne Brown is there.
Mm-hmm.
But according to, I believe it was Mike Garofalo, saying that he wants a new deal. He's in the final year of his deal that pays him $10 million. He's 35 years old. What do you think the Seahawks, what do you think their take is on this? That they want, they would sign him to an extension of some sort? Or what do you think?
Well, Pete Carroll says he wants to have him play past this year. So they should at some point start talking about an extension. Obviously, Jamal Adams is the one that I think they want to get done first, because again, he's such a big number that's going to be in there. And from the sounds of what Pete said and everybody else, they are making some progress and they seem to be optimistic that they can get something done. Now, that doesn't mean they will get something done, but they seem to be optimistic. So there's encouraging things there. But yeah, and the one thing that I think John Snyder brought this up is that they budgeted for a big number for Adams last year for this year. And so it's like, now, how much over that budget is he asking for? Is he asking for the 17, or can they get him done at 15, 5, or 16 million and make him the highest paid safety in NFL history? So, yeah, it's got a bunch of contract stuff going on, but I guess the fortunate thing is only having three draft choices, not overdoing it in free agency as far as big numbers. You know, they do have some cash in the budget on hand.
Just kind of makes you a little bit nervous, though, when you start talking about Dwayne Brown.
Yep.
You know, because, I mean, he's been such a good answer for them for a long time. I'm trying to remember who was playing left tackle. Was Fetty playing before we got Dwayne Brown? Or
he was on the right tackle side.
I'm trying to think. Well, I know we had Russell Okung for a while. Anyway, it's just one of those positions, John, I feel like is vital to have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have especially a quarterback like Russ, you need a good blindside. And, you know, I don't think Mike Iupati did him any favors last year. Mike Iupati really was struggling. But, it just kind of makes you nervous, because now that's kind of a position, if you have a guy like Russ, like I said, that's very important, more important than center, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because the left tackles get paid. Although, I'll tell you what, I was going through this the other day, and I was just amazed that not one tackle in free agency or a guy that was, cut or whatever, got $10 million or more.
Mm.
Either it was left tackle or right tackle. Now, again, we know some contract extensions, ate some good numbers like that, but it's like the highest paid tackle was Eric Fisher, who was cut by the Kansas City Chiefs, and he got 8.3 a year. And then I think one guy got 9, but that's about it. I mean, it's really low pay as far, and right tackles really struggled this year.
John, other news coming out of camp, Rashad Penny is sidelined after recently undergoing, quote, a cleanup in the same knee that he tore his ACL.
Mm-hmm.
Dave and I were talking about it earlier during the break that I don't know what he does. If Chris Carson stays relatively healthy this year, I don't know how much of an opportunity Rashad Penny's going to have to prove that he's worth them bringing back. I just looking at it now, I'd be stunned if he were back with his team after the season.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I mean, because, again, it's like, usually a guy that doesn't get the fifth-year option exercised usually ends up leaving anyways. And right now, he's not going to be getting big numbers or anything of that nature as far as free agency. So, they like him, obviously. But, again, availability is the most important thing. And if he's not available, then it's going to be tough.
Hey, John, we've talked about I feel like we talked yesterday about Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
And that's over the years. We've talked a lot about him. Another guy, Derek Carr. And he had a quote today, "I'd probably quit football if I had to play for somebody else." That's kind of interesting, because, we've always perceived anyway that there's possibly some kind of a, rift between, between John Gruden and Derek Carr, some
mm-hmm.
of it having to do with reportedly his swearing. But I just, that was kind of surprising coming out of there? What's the update on the quarterback situation in Vegas?
Well, I mean, he's the quarterback, and you know, Marcus Mariota decided to stay there at a much lower rate. I mean, from the sounds of things, at the moment, things are good because he did play well last year. He put up good numbers, all those different things. But you know, he can be, you know, and, like we all know, you don't swear in front of him, and John Gruden swears all the time, and so he doesn't like that. But, yeah, you can understand. It's you latch yourself onto a team. I mean, remember his older brother, of course, was latched onto an expansion Houston team and just got the snot beaten out of him all the way through the years. But, you know, Derek sounds like you know, he's a one-trick pony. He wants to stay a Raider and stay a Raider for life.
And the thing is, you know, we've looked at his numbers, but it's more about winning.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like in those situations, he's not one of a guy that's going to – he's not going to be Russell Wilson.
No, no. By the way, I was just looking at the – because I'm trying to figure out on the Dwayne Brown thing what kind of number he could come in at. And, of course, so I had to go naturally to Andrew Whitworth, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, Whitworth, I mean, he was making some real big money. I mean, at one point in 2017, he was making, what, 11 and a quarter million a year.
And similar age.
Similar age, yeah. And all that stuff. Then he came back in 2020 and did a three-year deal at $30 million. And then he came back and revised his contract and took a two-year deal this year for $17 million. So you'd have to figure if Dwayne Brown does get another contract, which I think they'll be happy to do, it may be a little bit less than $10
million. Mm. John, we saw the story earlier about Dolphins cornerback Xavien Howard as a holdout. Mm-hmm. In mandatory camp. He just signed a five-year, $75 million extension in 2019, and he's already holding out?
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
He's not going to get any adjustment to his contract, is he?
He might. I mean, you know, I think probably what it was, and see, that's where I thought that the Julio Jones thing could have been very hurtful for the wide receiver room, you know, because you go back and the highest paid cornerback and really the highest paid defensive player in free agency last year was the $16-plus million deal for Byron Jones, which certainly topped Xavien Howard's deal. And so you have the two of the higher-paid cornerbacks in the league. So he's probably mad or upset. It's like, well, I'm Xavier Howard. I've been here since they drafted me, and now I'm the second-highest-paid cornerback. So, yeah, there's a little tension in that regard.
Yeah, he got 10 picks last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that. But, yeah, I mean, I just remember getting ready to play the – Dolphins last year going, they spent how much money? I mean, those two corners and the other one didn't have great numbers. Jones mm-hmm. did not have great numbers.
Well, you know, we talk about Shaquille Griffin and the lack of interceptions that he had. Well, I mean, what, Byron Jones, in his days in Dallas, I think he only had two or three.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. And before he signed that big deal mm-hmm. there, so.
Maybe
yeah.
they weren't throwing at him.
Well, there's some of that.
Yeah.
Remember that game? What game? I know it was against Green Bay where.
Right. Yeah, they didn't throw against Sherm.
Sherm went over to A-Rod and says, hey, you weren't throwing my way, right? And he's like, no, we weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, another story surrounding the Dolphins, John. We saw that Tua Tagovailoa threw five interceptions in their minicamp practice today, which he's a guy I've had questions about. I think he was a really good college quarterback. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback at this level. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, and it's not based on this one thing. But what I thought was interesting, it says, much of the practice consisted of a torrential downpour, and the Dolphins never left the outside field. It was clear Coach Brian Flores wanted them to play through the adverse circumstances. Really? During mini camp with no pads or anything? And that seems an odd approach, but yeah, I guess it resulted in five interceptions for him, and Jacoby Brissett threw two interceptions.
Yeah, so you'd have to say that gripping the football was very difficult in being able to make those throws, and to think that Xavien Howard wasn't even here to get those interceptions.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's like, wow, what's going on? But I think Tua's going to be okay, but it's still going to take time. I mean, because you know, he was injured coming out of college, and you know, was slow in picking things up last year, but I still think he's going to be okay. I mean, if not, they, you know, any franchise that drafts a quarterback high in the draft and fails with the quarterback usually has to go through a rebuilding cycle.
You know, that sounded like something more that Matt Patricia would do mm-hmm. to make his team stay out there in the rain. I remember hearing stories about how their outside field in Detroit was all iced over, and they forced, you know, he forced them to go out there to make them tough.
Right.
Like, they're NFL players. They're seems already like, tough.
Seems like Dan Campbell would do that, wouldn't he?
Well,
he'd
see.
Have them out there in short sleeves and shorts.
He might be smarter than he sounds.
But that's
that'd be an upset.
But you'd have to get all that comes from Belichick. You know, because Bill Belichick isn't the nicest guy, I guess, dealing with the players and doing different things like that. And so I'm sure Brian learned it from Bill, and Bill's teaching it. Yeah,
I'll tell you what, and he had his team at 10-6. Brian Flores seems like he's doing a great job down there. Not many disciples of Bill Belichick that have success.
No, I mean, you can say that Bill O'Brien was probably one of the most. I mean, Charlie Weiss certainly was in college. Not in the pro, you know, but you know, Charlie Weiss had success, and then Bill O'Brien, you know, had a whole string of like 9-7 seasons that won, you know, a bad AFC Central, AFC South. So that was there, but in the end, it's like you know, the Belichick tree is pretty broken, I think.
Yeah.
Which you look at the coaching tree, but the one story that just drove me crazy last week is
not Joshy Boy.
No, it wasn't okay. Joshy Boy. That was a great success story in Denver with him.
Yeah, but he was good.
Oh, he was really good. Yeah. Picks a fight with Jay Cutler in the first couple of days. He was head coach and ends up trading him. And
he drafted Tebow, didn't he?
Oh yeah, that worked out well. But and didn't even play him at tight end, which is kind of amazing. Wow. But yeah, so which you can see is that you know, Brian had some success and all that, but you know, it's still just kind of so different. But the story that drove me crazy last week was one where they have special things being developed right now by Matt Patricia, and some people say yes, and people think he's going to resurface as a head coach. Now, who's going to be dumb enough to hire him as head coach as bad as he was in Detroit and the players all hating him?
Mm. Yeah, so I'm sorry, a couple of guys, Bill O'Brien and Matt Patricia, where are both of those guys, do we?
Well, Patricia ended up
going back to New England?
Yeah, he went back to New England, so he's working with the defense. Not defensive coordinator or anything like that. He's, you know, defensive specialist, I guess you could say. He's working in coordination with what they're doing. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Bill went to Alabama.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm seeing an interesting trend here, John, with the statements of veterans talking about young quarterbacks.
Right.
In the case of Jacksonville, talking about a rookie quarterback, and it was Shaquille Griffin just talking about, you know, it's insane what he's seen Trevor Lawrence do to this point. Then I'm reading Trevor Lawrence has been very limited in what he's doing. Apparently he's dealing with some injury, a hamstring
right,
or something.
Right.
So he really hasn't done much, but Shaquille says it's insane. And then I'm reading this story where Carolina Panthers wide receiver Robbie Anderson says he sees, quote, a new glow in quarterback Sam Darnold. He says, when I walked into the building, I could see a new energy out of him, like a glow, charisma that I didn't really see in New York.
Yeah, and,
like,
and this is Sam without the vaccine. He's not taking any vaccine.
I would say that that's the opposite of what I would think of him. Sam Darnold.
Glowing?
Glowing.
He's glowing.
Yeah, he was dull.
Are these guys just trying to speak it into existence, John, in both cases? I mean, Lawrence, we have no idea. I'm sure he'll be very good. But just to hear that he's been very limited in what he's doing, yet Shaquille's out there going, what I've seen from him is insane. I'm like, okay, calm down.
I know.
And then a new glow for Sam Darnold.
Oh. Well, Shaquille, we still love him, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just trying to talk up his quarterback, and maybe, you know, he can get a gift from Trevor once he gets his contract done.
All right, John, here we go. I know you love this stuff. Cover of Madden 2021 that's coming out here? No, 22.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here are the candidates. Patrick Mahomes, of course, and he was on the 20 Madden, so but still, they're thinking about him. How about Aaron Donald? I like that one. Aaron Donald was in a commercial I saw today that was, I can't even remember, it was some random. I'm like, good, the big guy's finally starting to get some love. And then so after him, Derrick Henry, then Tom Brady. Does he really need to be on that?
No.
Alvin Kamara.
Is Tom older than
Madden?
Madden? Than Madden?
Yeah.
I think he's older than John Madden.
He's certainly older than the game itself.
Yeah,
Alvin Kamara. Josh Allen, T.J. Watt. So, it's a little bit more than his brother. I don't know. What do you think, John? Who do you like?
I tend to like Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
With Derrick Henry being, I think, probably number two.
Did he play in all 16? I think he did. He played in
Derrick Henry?
Yeah.
No. If my numbers aren't, I think they're right, but it's like in the last 2 years, there's not been a running back, starting running back, that's played all 16 games.
Really? Not a single back has played all 16 games?
No.
Really? Well, Derrick Henry played 16 last year.
Oh, he did play 16? Okay, so he was the one. All right.
Yeah, he's only missed two games. He played 15 his rookie year and played 15 in 2019, every other year 16.
I'll tell you, that's remarkable for a running back. You know, and so when people, I heard earlier somebody, I can't remember who it was talking about, Chris Carson, played in 14 games, 15 games, 13 games. I mean, that's pretty much run of the mill. Right? I mean, that's what you get out of running backs. You just, that position, you just get pounded.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, being a catcher in baseball. I mean, you just get pounded, chasing the ball on the low pitches and getting hit by the bat and all these different things. And their bodies get beat up, too. So, I mean, you almost equate running back to catchers in baseball.
I was telling Bob that, very few times I had my hands on the ball in the NFL, you realize that everybody wants to kill you. All 11 guys are trying to kill you. As a linebacker, I'm out there. There's probably one guy that's going to block me. Maybe the fullback, leads through the hole. But there's just two guys that are paying attention to me. But, man, now all of a sudden you get the other side of the ball. All 11 are trying to get you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a totally different story.
It's not fun, I can tell you. I would imagine. It's
a total different sense of panic. Right there.
So that caused you not to try to go and get too many interceptions?
Well, yeah, exactly, John, because I didn't want that. And if you saw me run back, we did a thing last week where I picked off Dan Marino and then had the worst run back ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, my run back skills were terrible. But, yeah, maybe that was part of it. I was just scared, John.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
John, the 425, again, you guys can text in your questions to 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. 425 asking about Sheldon Richardson. Not going back to Cleveland. He signed with Minnesota, didn't he?
Yeah, he signed it with Minnesota today.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was like 1 year at 3.6, something like that, $3.6 million. So came in at a nice little discount. So, but again, at this time of the year, to be able to pull off $3.6 million is actually pretty good, even though I'm sure it doesn't satisfy him. But at least he gets a job. He gets to go back with the Vikings, and he's still a very good player.
Hey, John, we were talking about earlier about the corners and just the number. What did we say, Bob? 11? 13 if you count Ugo Amadi and Marquise Blair.
13 corners, yep.
Corners, and those guys are listed as safeties just because, they'll probably end up playing nickel corner, though. But you confident in that? And, as far as we've talked a little bit about the Stephon Gilmore thing, but I feel like they've been able to develop guys. I think they feel like they have the guys that they need here. What do you think?
Well, so far, I mean, you're seeing good things out of Akello Witherspoon. And, he's got the leading chance along with DJ Reed to be the starter. And that's been pretty much like that since the beginning of the OTAs. And now we're in minicamp. And so, you figure that, they've refreshed him on the kick step. He's a big, tall, angular type of cornerback that Pete Carroll likes, and he's got good skills. Being former second round pick, so he right now that may be the answer to the question. And of course, you still have Trey Flowers, and you have so many other guys.
360 asking, is the AFC North the toughest division?
No, NFC West is the toughest division because each team has a good quarterback. Maybe Jimmy Garoppolo is not great, but he's good. And then you look at the trade power that's in this division, which is just remarkable. It's like, Seattle traded two first-round picks to get Jamal Adams, and Trent Williams ended up going to San Francisco. Jalen Ramsey coming to the Los Angeles Rams, along with Matthew Stafford. I mean, there's such star power in this division. And, of course, they got lucky and hit on Leonard Floyd and then gave him $16 million a year. So when you really kind of look at the big picture, I'd still say the NFC West is the best. I think one of the kind of surprise rising divisions is the AFC East, because now Buffalo is one of the best teams in the AFC. Miami and the Jets have had really good off seasons and are improving, and we'll see where it goes with the Patriots.
Is the NFC East still going to stink out loud?
I think it's going to be better. I mean,
that's not setting the bar very high. The winner had 7-9 record last year.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I think out of the division, it was the second worst we've seen in more than a decade. And of course, the worst was the NFC West back in 2008, which was just terrible. But I think that it's improving. I mean, Washington now has one of the best defenses in football. We'll see where it goes with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is, I think he's also older than John Madden. And, you know, it's like, and we'll, I think the Eagles are going to be bad. Dallas, I still think, has a chance to really bounce back, because look at the power they have at the receiver position. And Ezekiel Elliott, according to Dak Prescott, is in the best shape of his life.
We never hear that about athletes.
No, no.
Never.
No, never.
Best shape of their life?
Yeah.
I was never in the best shape of my life, Bob.
I hear it before every fight that I watch.
Oh,
he's in the
you?
Best training camp of his entire career.
Did they say that about Mike Tyson?
Yeah, they say about everybody. Oh, every guy, especially coming off a loss. Oh, this was the best camp we've ever had.
Yeah.
Who was the guy that was kind of a little chunky when he went out? And I don't know if he fought Tyson. I remember it was back in like the 90s. Buster Douglas, maybe?
He was he was in good shape during that fight.
Oh, I thought there was one where a guy went out there and was not in shape, because Chuck Knox was very big about weighing us in, and he would give you a weight that he wanted you to be every week. And I'd always go and beg for extra pounds.
I got a couple extra pounds, coach.
But I remember he brought that up a couple of times. You all see that fight now.
Yeah.
Now, basically, he was saying, you know, you can't be fat and out of shape.
I will say maybe Douglas was in the best shape of his life in that fight.
He was.
Plus, he had a different inspiration. His mom had died a couple weeks previous that fight. So,
all of
that worked.
You know, AFC North, though, probably second hottest, you think, division
behind
NFC West?
Yeah.
I mean, the Browns, Steelers, Baltimore, always good.
No, Cincinnati. Though.
Cincinnati's bringing him down.
If they can get Burrow back for an entire season, I mean, he was promising while he was there.
Yeah.
Oh, he looked good. It was the offensive line around him, and I don't think they addressed the offensive line well enough.
Yeah, they got him a receiver, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because they go first pick with a receiver.
But he was so excited about it, because that's a receiver from Clemson that he knows.
Yeah. All right, John.
Well, that's good that he knows him.
Oh, yeah. They're together.
Who cares? You could have had each other.
Joe Burrow off the field, at least Chase is going to be there to watch him.
Yeah, exactly. They know each other.
Yeah.
And you didn't want Penei Sewell.
No.
That would have been a terrible move.
Oh, yeah.
John, we'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, Jordan Brooks of your Seattle Seahawks will join us next here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to a member of this Seattle Seahawks team as they get their mandatory mini camp underway. A guy that I know Dave Wyman has spent a lot of time watching on film and talking about. We've talked about him a ton, and he's with us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. We're talking about linebacker Jordan Brooks with us. Jordan, how are you, man?
Doing all right, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm curious. I know things are just getting underway, but how different does this feel now that you've got a year under your belt? I know it was a really unique year, no fans, and you know all this virtual learning and things like that. But just having that under your belt, how much more comfortable are you right now?
I feel a lot comfortable. You know what I'm saying? I felt a lot more comfortable at the end of my rookie year. Last maybe four games, I started really getting more comfortable in the playbook and playing with the guys around me. And so coming into OTA now, I feel loose, I feel good, and feel with a lot of confidence going into year two.
I saw on your Twitter, it says, whoever exalts himself will be humbled, whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Jordan, I will exalt you, okay? So that way you don't need to brag about it. You had a great rookie year. I mean, I know it started off rough, and, you know, I'm looking at the number of snaps early on, not a lot. But, you know, maybe your best game, the Rams, you're only in 28 snaps. You had 8 tackles, a tackle for loss. What was tell me two things, your favorite game where you thought you had your best game, and then secondly, a play to you that stands out from last year.
I would say my best game – altogether, I would probably be against New York, in which we lost. So probably didn't get a lot of attention. I think that was my best game as far as just the way I played the run in the pass. And then a play that stands out would definitely be the goal line stand versus the Rams. That was big for us in that game. And so that's something I'll never forget.
Well, I would also say you should throw flattening George Kittle down in Arizona. That had to have been pretty high on the list. I mean, that must have felt good.
Yeah, it felt good watching the tape. You know, just out there competing with guys like that, of that caliber, you know, definitely got me excited.
Hey, Jordan, when we talk to guys after their first year in the league, often we, you know, we'll ask them, hey, what was the biggest adjustment? What surprised you? And it, almost to a man, they talk about the speed of the game, the speed of the guys. You're playing the best of everybody out there. What was that like for you, that transition from the college level game to the pro game? Was speed the biggest difference, or in your mind, what was it?
Yeah, it's definitely speed, but I think what people get misconstrued when they hear the speed of the game, it's not so much the physical speed, it's the mental speed. Mm. I feel like I'm as fast as anybody, so it wasn't physical for me, it was the more mental side, letting the game slow down for me mentally. And, you know, early in the year, everything just seemed like it was going 100 miles per hour. You know what I'm saying? And once you get more comfortable, things slow down for you mentally. It's getting more comfortable with the playbook. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that'll just get better and better for you. What about pass coverage? You know, I didn't see you drop into zone a lot at Texas Tech, but, you know, against Arizona, you picked up a deep crosser, broke up a pass. I thought that in the Ram game, when Jamal Adams got the strip sack, that was because of you. You actually picked up Gerald Everett, your new teammate, looked like on a deep crosser. It seemed like that stuff, was that difficult for you, though, to get in? Was that maybe one of the harder things to handle the zone drops?
That's a good question. I would say yes and no, because, like you said, I wasn't asked a lot of that at Texas Tech College. So it was more of me just getting accustomed to feeling route concepts, understanding the principle behind the coverage that we're playing. Everything physical is already there. You know, I feel like I'm physically capable of covering anybody, but it was more of the experience. I came in very raw, put it that way. I came in raw as far as driving back in the zone coverage. So I'm still getting coached up. I'm still learning, and I'm getting better and better as days go by.
Jordan, are you a guy that will ask questions of the veterans, or are you a guy that will sit back and just watch? Because you had two great guys on this roster with a ton of experience, obviously, in Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. KJ is not there now, but just in terms of their impact on you last year, were you picking their brain, or were you just kind of sitting back and watching them?
I think the way I've always learned is to sit back and watch. I think I can – That's the easiest way for me to process is when I sit back and observe and imitate in that way. Where I am now, you know, the way that I play the game is bits and pieces of different guys that I watched growing up, just imitating and planted it into my game. So with Bobby and KJ, I definitely ask questions when needed to, but most of the time I just watch those guys, how they prepare for practice, how they prepare for meetings, what they ask in meetings, what they do outside of the facility as far as taking care of their body, everything that goes into the game. I just sit back and observe it and try to, you know, steal bits and pieces from them.
Is there somebody when you were growing up, Jordan, that you watched and liked? I don't know if you played offense in high school, or I'm sure you did, but was there a player that you kind of modeled your game after, or somebody you admire?
Oh, most certainly. I had three guys that I kind of looked up to. So most of my life I played running back. Until my junior year at high school, they moved me to safety and linebacker. But I played running back all the way up to that point. So growing up, I watched Barry Sanders and I watched Walter Payton and Reggie Bush. Mm-hmm. And all three of those guys, you know, outstanding running backs. And those guys I would imitate in the games, at practice, and at home, just by myself, just whenever, you know what I'm saying? And so those would be the three for me for sure.
Now, were you shifty like Barry? I mean, Dave here, he played against Barry Sanders. He tried to tackle Barry Sanders like a lot of people tried.
Hey. I made a couple anyway.
Could you cut and plant like he did? Just stop on a dime and change direction?
Not quite like he did. I tried my best, but yeah, I mean, Barry Sanders one of a kind.
Yeah. Well, hey, Jordan, tell us about your workouts. I was noting that it looks like you do not skip leg day. That's for sure. It looks like you're in great shape, man. You look big. What kind of tell us a little bit about your workout. What kind of stuff you're doing in the off season to take care of your body?
I do a lot of the stuff that I did in college. My strength coach that I had in college, Dave Scholes, he really you know, put me on game as far as just getting stronger and faster. So I do a lot of those work, those same workouts that I did back while I was in college my last year. And it's funny you talk about legs. I try not to do too much legs because if I go all week going legs, I'll Saquon thighs, man. So I try to space it out during the week, you know, as far as working on my legs. But as far as the workout, I still do the same workout program that I did in college.
Did you have any off-season goals, just whether it was, hey, I want to gain some weight, I want to lose some weight, or just specific areas of your game where you said, okay, I need to work on this, or maybe the coach said, hey, we'd love to see you improve on this aspect of your game. What was sort of the off-season checklist for you?
I think my goal, and so I tell myself and I tell people around me that, I mean, I envision myself getting interceptions, taking in 100 yards. And so my whole focus and emphasis this year was during the offseason was just working on breaking on routes, reading QB intentions, trying to do the extra stuff to really try to get those interceptions. And then obviously as far as taking care of my body, kind of just maintaining the weight. I like the weight that I play at, about 240, 235 range. Maintaining the weight and just continue to develop. Yeah.
Well, good deal. Hey, do you guys still power clean? I'm just curious. That was, I thought, was the best lift that I ever did. Did you do anything like that, or is that maybe a little bit too kind of dangerous or strenuous?
I used to, and then I had a shoulder injury with the power clean, so I kind of stay away from it now.
Gotcha.
Don't encourage him, Dave. We can't have this man injured.
No way, man. You had a great rookie year, man. I know there was a lot of pressure being a first rounder, but you handled it great, man, and we really enjoyed watching you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hey, Jordan, we appreciate you taking the time, man. We wish you the best during this camp, and obviously when training camp gets underway, we hope to get a chance to speak with you again. Thanks so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
There you go, Jordan Brooks of your Seattle Seahawks. Coming up, a couple of notable performances last night from some Mariner prospects. We'll hear about them when we sweep the dial next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
So it's a big night for some of the Mariners' top prospects down at Tacoma, and I know we said temper expectations when it comes to what they're doing at AAA compared to the major leagues, but Evan White hit his second home run in just three games down there in his rehab stint.
Now the next pitch is hit in the air towards right center field. This is deep. Back is Bishop into the alleyway at the fence. Look it up. It is gone. A two-run home run to right center field towards the scoreboard for Evan White. And the Red Ears have taken the lead in the bottom of the sixth inning. It is 3-1.
Good. More of that down there. Get your confidence. Get your mechanics worked out. Get your approach worked out. Whatever was ailing you at this level, outside of physical issues, work on it down there. Because we were talking about Evan White before the injury that, hey, is this a guy that's going to need to be sent down? It's not working at the plate for him defensively. He's a stud. We've talked about it over and over, but offensively, he's got a minor league bat. We talked about the catchers and Cal Raleigh and a 21-game hit streak. When does he come up? Don't bring him up until you absolutely need him, and he's absolutely ready. I would say the same thing for Evan White. I know you signed him to a big deal based on his, you know, lack of experience and everything. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal, but let him get himself right down there. There's no urgency for him to be up here right now.
I wonder if that's it's different because he has a bigger contract than most guys down there. It just got to be kind of a weird experience for him. But, yeah, well, according to the latest that I'm looking at, has he been down there for three games, I believe? Three hits, two home runs. So, and, you know, batting 273, we'll see how it plays out over time, but the one that's disturbing to me was Luis Torrens. That one was he was batting 215 down.
Yeah,
there.
And he's been called up,
and they're calling him up. That's also disturbing.
And he'll be the DH tonight.
But the good news is
he's not catching.
Exactly.
Tom Murphy will be catching.
Sweeping the dial.
We're going to get into this more at 5:30, and it's a huge deal now in baseball. But Jeff Passan came out today and said that pitchers are just absolutely frustrated with MLB and how they're going to enforce all these substances beginning on June 21st.
I think the most frustrating part to players is that the league is not going to be differentiating between industrial adhesives like Spider-Tac and sort of lo-fi substances like mixing sunscreen and rosin together, which players have been doing for a long time, or using pine tar. They are treating everything as if it's the same. There are no misdemeanors or felonies. Everything in this case is a felony, and players don't like that very much.
Yeah, I've seen and I've retweeted a couple of guys. You can check it out at Bob Stelton on Twitter. Trevor Bauer had like a 5-part tweet on this. Tyler Glasnow, who suffered an injury, is blaming it on the fact that he stopped using the substances. These guys would know better than I would, certainly, you know, what it means to their grip and what, you know, how much torque it's putting on their arm without it and them trying to control the pitch and keep the velocity up, all that. So, yeah, these guys are not shy about, you know, voicing their displeasure.
Well, the whole thing, and, you know, Mike, during the break, we were talking, or during the interview, how Major League Baseball just jumped right in the middle of the year on this.
But that's Bauer's issue with it.
Yeah, but do you think it's because of the, you know, the whole thing they went through with Houston? They're just trying to jump on that stuff right away because, you know, once you start, you put the integrity of the game in question, I think they probably feel like the owners that that's the worst thing that you could possibly do, and they're jumping all over it. But, you know, now the pitchers already are fragile. And like you were saying with Blowers, they can't sometimes even make a throw. To first base.
First or anywhere but home plate from the mound.
Yeah. So, I mean, if everything's not just perfect for some of these pitchers, you know, and maybe it has to do with whatever substances, you know, on their fingers at the time, could see where it could throw a lot of these pitchers out of whack.
Sweeping the dial.
So we know there's some issues between Stephon Gilmore and the Patriots. He's a holdout right now. And Mike Reese, who's the Patriots reporter for ESPN NFL Nation, says it's a pretty complicated situation, actually, between the two sides.
He was due about $11, $12 million this year, and the Patriots advanced him $4.5 million of that money last year just to sort of bump him up. So when they did that, they knew that there was another situation that the sides were going to have to address. They haven't got there at this point, and I think that's what is keeping Stephon Gilmore away. He's also recovering from a partially torn quad that he suffered in week 15 last year. So that sort of complicates the situation a little bit, but still more time on that one. But that is a notable storyline that he hasn't shown up here for mandatory minicamp.
Yeah, I remember that about him when we were getting ready to play the Patriots, that I don't know if we talked to somebody back there, but they advanced him $4.5 million. His contract. I'm not sure exactly why that's causing some problems later, but obviously, long story short, he wants more money.
He's due to get $7 million this year.
Yeah, and I think he's probably the best corner in the league. I mean, was he
better
MVP?
Than Ramsey?
Yeah, Jalen Ramsey's pretty good. That's too bad too.
Yeah,
he's in our.
It is too bad.
It's really too bad. Remember DK didn't? I don't think he had a catch against him.
Yeah, Ramsey did well against him, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. So, Stephon Gilmore, I remember the other thing about there was something about their third down percentage. They were, like, ridiculous. It was like they were giving up, like, 28% or something like that. Mm-hmm. And everybody else, I think the next, you know, lowest was, like, 37,
38. High 30s, low
40s. So, yeah, he's definitely worth that, especially if you look at the corners, how they're getting paid down in Miami, and one of them's already complaining about it.
After signing a 5-year, $75 million extension in 2019. Nope, not good enough.
Right. Well, guy got 10 picks. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it's valuable position. I mean, the guys on the outside, you know, just in general, corners get paid more than safeties, outside backers more than inside backers, defensive ends more than defensive tackles. It's just, you know, if you can play in that outside of the field, that just means you have a tremendous amount of athletic ability.
All right. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.